Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
Friday, what's up, everybody? Welcome back, closing out the week here on the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. It's Friday, it's January 15th, 2021. We have 8 games here on Friday night. Should have been 10, but again, 2 more games getting postponed due to the COVID protocols. That is the new norm here in 2021, the NBA season. Adam Pfeiffer here, joined to close out the week by my main man, Stefano. Steph, haven't had you on the podcast yet this year during the season. You were on with Joe and I for a couple off-season podcasts where I believe it was you that was heavily touting Chris Boucher and James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets. So things are probably going well for you right now, especially after the James Harden trade. What's going on? Thanks for stopping by. And how many times did you rip your shirt off in excitement on Wednesday?
Well, first off, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be on this fabulous podcast. I was excited. I was more excited earlier in the year about the Nets potentially getting James Harden. I'm still pretty excited about it. I think the Nets gave up a lot, but if they win a championship, it's worth it. I'm worried about the 4 late pick swaps. That was the part of the deal where I'm like, okay, this could get really bad if this doesn't go well. And I think it's going to go well. And like I said in like that preseason show, you know, people, the narrative that there's only one ball if these three are on the same team, like, is just so overblown. Like, that's just not how it works.
Acting like they're just refusing to pass the ball. Yeah.
That's just not how it works. And so you've got 3 people who are kind of unguardable one-on-one, and you can't leave any of them open. I want to shout out my man Joe Harris. We talked about him.
Joe Harris made me look so smart. It was one of the games where Durant and Kyrie were out, and he was coming off the bench. And I wrote him up and talked about it on the pod against the Sixers because they were so bad at against shooters off screens. It was after the Bradley Beal 60 burger, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Harris went for like 26, 5, and 4. Like, he's the GOAT.
Yeah, and he now, like, the reason why they paid him is for this exact reason where, okay, you have to guard Kyrie, Harden, and Kevin Durant, like, one-on-one. Like, you can't leave Joe Harris open in the corner because he's going to hit that shot. And they're likely going to use Jeff Green as, like, their closing center. Like, DeAndre Jordan's likely going to be the starter throughout the rest of the year. But Jeff Green's going to see, like, those closing minutes, and he's going to be that death lineup center, so to speak. He's also someone he can hit an open shot. I mean, teams will likely fade away from Jeff Green, and I'm going to expect a lot of zone against the Nets. But, like, you can't guard them. Like, they're unguardable. like you can't double Harden. You can't double KD. You can't really double Kyrie because they have just bucket getters everywhere. So, I mean, I think this is going to work. I think the notion that, you know, this, again, there's only one ball is overblown, and, like, I'm not worried about them passing the ball or sharing the ball, especially with Kevin Durant. I'm impressed with KD, to be honest.
He's looked so good.
Yeah, and, like, his attitude on the court, like, he's there for one reason, and it's to win a championship. So if Kyrie and James Harden are kind of acting up or whatever, I mean, he is so good at basketball that they respect his opinion, right? And so, like, he's the one – it's crazy to say, but, like, KD's the one to kind of keep this team grounded. He's the team leader. So I'm excited for it. It's going to lead to some interesting basketball, lots of talking points. I'm sure Twitter is going to be having fun at the Nets if they ever struggle. But this is exciting. I think people think it's bad for basketball to have these super teams. I don't think it's bad for basketball. I think it makes it even more compelling, and it kind of creates a villain, and that's always good.
Yeah, I mean, Durant and Harden are both top 15 scorers of all time. I mean, Durant's definitely top 10.
I would say they're arguably top seven.
Very, very conservative with that, by the way. And then Kyrie is at least top 30. Like, it's insane to have 3 of the best scorers ever on the same team. Congratulations.
Shout out Joe Harris again.
Four of the best scorers of all time if you had Joe Harris. And I'm sure that, like, there's going to be buyouts with veteran players later on the season. They'll be like, hey, I'll go to the Nets. Like, I'll go play with these guys. So it'll be interesting to see. But let's get to these games. We got 8 of them. Brooklyn, not on the slate. But it's going to be interesting to see how these players with their new teams shape out the rest of the way. But we'll start with Boston, who I've been doing the game-by-game article all week, filling in for Joe, who just had his baby. I think he just came home today, so congrats again to Joe.
Yep, congrats,
but,
Joe.
But I feel like it's been, like, 2 months since I talked about the Boston Celtics, and it feels like that because they missed so many games with the COVID-related stuff. But they're on track to play here against Orlando. They still have some news. Obviously, Jason Tatum's probably not going to play. And then a lot of players have been upgraded to questionable. I mean, Jaylen Brown, Daniel Tice, Semi Ojeleye, all these guys are questionable for Boston. Robert Williams is still out. Tristan Thompson is going to play. And then if Jaylen Brown plays, given he's taken on such a larger role this year anyway, I mean, it's hard not to look to him. Maybe there's concerns about his conditioning because they've missed so many games in a row now, but at the same time, it's not like they've been, out for months or anything like that. It's not like they've been injured. I mean, Jaylen Brown at 8,900, like, what do you think of Boston right now? Like, I think the easiest way to sum it up is if Daniel Tice is out, Tristan Thompson's got to be one of the best value plays of the slate because they just don't have anybody else. They would have him and Taco Fall at center because Robert Williams is out.
Absolutely. I think you could toss in Grant Williams as a potential value as well, just because he's just going to be one of the big men, and they'll use him as their small ball center. Taco Fall is fun to say you want to play him, but with Tristan Thompson back, it kind of ruins any sort of minutes potential ceiling, and his minute ceiling anyway is like 20, right? So Taco Fall doesn't really fall there, no pun intended. I'm with you on Jaylen Brown. I think 8.9K is appropriately priced. I've got no issue going there, considering he's going to be the guy, right? Like, his usage this year has been great. He's been a really strong permanent producer. Orlando has been a team I've tended to like stay away from, but their defense hasn't been great to start this year. So I'm not worried about this matchup. I think Jaylen Brown, is one of the top targets on the slate, just considering what's going on with Boston.
Yeah, assuming he plays, he still has to clear that hurdle. But
yep,
32% usage rate without Tatum on the floor this year, and he's averaging 19 shot attempts per game. Like, if Jason Tatum doesn't play in this game, he's taking 25 shots, unless the game blows out or something and he only plays like 26 minutes or something like that.
And the lack of bigs, too, will lead to more rebounding upside and peripheral production.
Absolutely, which is something you sometimes get. I mean, Jaylen Brown, you look at the last two games before they got shut down, so to speak, 12 and 13 rebounds. So there's your proof right there. Tristan Thompson, I mean, with Daniel Tice out, they've been starting, when this team's been at full strength, they've been starting Tice and Thompson together, so his rebounding numbers haven't been as great, but you take Daniel Tice off the floor, and Tristan Thompson's at a 41% rebounding rate, so if no Tice, he's probably going to play at worst, 28 minutes, probably more, because they just don't have anybody else to play the five, so at 4,800, he'd be a great option. And then you can take your shots, like you said, on Grant Williams at 3,500, Semi Ojeleye, if he plays, at 3,600. Jeff Teague gets a usage bump, but like, Jeff Teague has not worked out this year. And then I don't know about you, but 7,600 for Marcus Smart still seems a little too much for me, even with Tatum out, especially if Jaylen Brown's back. Like, I think 7,600 for Marcus Smart, I'll just pass on. If he goes off, then so be it.
Yeah, on a larger slate, I'm with you. If it was a smaller slate, I wouldn't be too scared off by the 7,600 price tag. I will say, if Jaylen Brown is out, I would have some Marcus Smart intrigue. It would also kind of bump up those other guards like Peyton Pritchard, Jeff Teague. Offense needs to come from somewhere, and those two will have the ball in their hands a lot. I'd be more interested in Pritchard over Teague, but, I think Jaylen Brown's going to play. I'm pretty confident that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, he's really the main – him and Tristan Thompson are the main focus for me on the Boston side.
Yeah, easily. I agree. By the way, Yusuf Nurkic to the locker room, so yikes.
That's not fun.
Hand injury. What about Orlando? We've seen Aaron Gordon off the minutes limit the last couple games. He's played 36 and 35 minutes. He's been fairly productive, facilitating pretty well, which might actually be a thing because they're running out of guards. I mean, Markelle Fultz was initiating all their pick-and-roll offense. He's out, obviously, for the year. Carter Williams is out. Fournier's out. Cole Anthony's not really facilitating. He's just jacking and not shooting the ball well at all. I don't really want to play Cole Anthony here. Aaron Gordon's the guy that I don't play a lot when he's at this price, But if he's playing 35 minutes and his rebounding numbers aren't ever like incredible, but since Jonathan Isaac's been out since the start of last year, whenever he got hurt last year, Aaron Gordon is so much more of an efficient and a productive fantasy producer when he's playing the power forward. And now if he's getting more facilitating, like, he could be more interesting than I originally thought. And obviously his team, you know, starts with Nikola Vucevic, and he's been great his last three games.
Yeah, the big thing here for Gordon is that, you know, he's no longer on that, like, 28 minutes limit, right? We've seen him play 36 and 35 the past two games. Orlando's shorthanded. I mean, the usage and the production is there for him. I've got no issue targeting him here at 7.3K. He's actually going to be someone I'm going to look to prioritize, depending on certain news breaks, of course. But I have a lot of interest in Aaron Gordon. The price is fair. Again, like, the assists are up, the rebounding's down. But, like, I expect the rebounding to improve, especially in this sort of game environment where, you know, if Boston is shorthanded and Tristan Thompson really is the only big, we'll see more Grant Williams, right? And that means they're playing small, which leads to more rebounding opportunities for someone like Aaron Gordon in kind of a sneaky pace-up spot. I know these are not pacey teams, but when teams are lacking front court depth, they actually increase their pace because they're playing with more guards. So that just naturally increases pace. So that interests me with Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, and the last week, Aaron Gordon leads the Magic with an 18% assist rate. They just don't have any facilitating guards anymore. The Fultz is done, and Carter Williams is hurt. Like, Terrence Ross isn't facilitating, Fournier's not there, and he's not really much of a facilitator. Like, they have no facilitators on this team. I'm just starting to kind of realize that now. So Aaron Gordon might be playing, like, some point, not like you know, Bam Adebayo, Jokic type, like, point forward type situation or point center, but he's clearly getting an uptick in facilitating, which is nice. Any Vooch here, 9K? I mean, Boston bottom five in terms of protecting the rim this year, and their center position is completely depleted. And Vooch is he's just so involved. I mean, 24, 24, 19 shots his last three games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 9K is still too cheap, in my opinion. And that's what it comes down to. You know, we're talking about Aaron Gordon's increased usage. Vucevic really is the one who's running the show. He's their quote unquote primary ball handler. He's their main facilitator. You can even label him as their point guard if you want to label him as a point guard. The offense is running through Vooch. You know, 9K is a bargain. And again, this is going to be a depleted Boston front court, right? Tristan Thompson's not going to play 35, 36 minutes. He doesn't have it in him. And I know that the Celtics don't want to do that, which means he's probably going to get some Grant Williams shares against him. And that's a mismatch, right? Grant Williams can't stop Vucevic in the low post. And if they double him, it'll lead to increased assist opportunities. And his minutes when Tristan Thompson's on the floor on the defensive end, that leads him to stay around the rim, right? On offense. On defense, which leads to rebounding opportunities. You know, so, I mean, again, depending how certain news breaks on this slate, because it's very early, right? But, you know, I'm looking to target one of Vooch or Aaron Gordon in my lineups just because I think this is a sneaky good game environment for both of them.
I like it. It's good stuff. Let's go to New York and Cleveland up next. The Cavs just continuously banged up. Colin Sexton, Darius Garland both ruled out. Dellavedova once again out. Kevin Porter still away from the team. Andre Drummond's expected to play, so that's good. And I would imagine Jared Allen's not going to be ready to play in this game.
Their new starting small forward.
Right. Dude, we didn't talk about that, but, like, as a Cavs fan, I saw that part of the trade get thrown in. I was like, huh? I was confused. And I was like, you know what?
You should be happy by it.
I was going to say, he's 22. He's awesome. And gives the Cavs flexibility if they want to trade Drummond or something, or Kevin Love, or whoever. So he's a stud. But it'll be interesting to see what the minutes and rotation looks like when he's part of the team, but I don't think we'll have to worry about that in this game. And then for the Knicks, Obi Toppin returned to the lineup and played less than a minute in the last game, so he's back, but he's not playing much. And then Reggie Bullock, questionable. Alec Burks, doubtful. Where do you want to start with this game?
I guess we can start on the Cleveland side. I mean, at 5.2K, we should still have interest in Damian Dotson. He's essentially their point guard. Him and Yogi Ferrell are going to split the minutes. Yogi is certainly in play at 3.4K. You know, the minutes haven't been great, and a lot of his production came in blowout minutes in his last game. But again, they don't really have any ball handlers, and I expect
him to
kind of creep up. Did he get waived? I'm wrong. Oh, yeah, he did get waived.
Yeah, he was part of the three players they
I knew that, actually. Yep, that's on me. Good call. I'm glad we have some Cleveland fandom.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, I have like a on my Twitter. I have a Yogi Ferrell like section on TweetDeck, so anything that gets brought up with him related, it just I get a notification. So
to so that I mean that leads more to that's more Damian Dotson love, right? Like he's gonna play.
They have no cards. Like yeah, that's why I like Chetty too. We'll talk about Chetty. That's why I like him too.
Yep, absolutely. So you know, I think Damian Dotson's still priced appealingly. So the Knicks in general aren't a great matchup. I think that's important to note. This is, you know, Coach Thibodeau has his blueprints on this team, and they're a defensive minded team that's playing at a slow pace, which doesn't bode well for a DFS game environment. That said, you know, the opportunity for Damian Dotson, for Isaac Okoro, for Chetty Osman, you know, they're going to handle the ball a lot. They're priced all fairly. Chetty's probably going to play close to 40 minutes. I think he played 38 in his last game. So I have no issue going there. I mean, you could even consider Lamar Stevens as a punt. The production really hasn't been great with his like limited minutes. So, you know, it's a bit of a stretch and you're kind of a little thin if you go there, but I mean, someone's got to play, right?
I mean, I feel like I'd rather play Lamar Stevens and see if he gets any sort of usage and play Isaac Okoro with his no usage.
Like, it's close. I mean, the thing, Okoro is sub 4K now, so
yeah. If and you know he's playing 35 minutes.
4.7K, I would maybe I would probably lean on your side. At 3.9K, I would just prefer to take a little more minute security.
Shout out to Isaac Okoro, though. Cleveland's like top three in defensive rating this year. He's been pretty good defensively, which is
that was nice. A good pick.
Yeah, I was scratching my head a little bit because I actually wanted Obi Toppin, but it was more of the sexy pick. But then I watched some of his highlights and. He's you know, he's got a long way to go, but defensively he might be their best defensive player already. I like Chetty though. I mean 6'2", it's like price for his floor. I don't think he's got like a massive ceiling. His ceiling's probably like 40, but he's been handling the ball a lot more with Sexton and Garland out, but especially since Garland's been out. I think there's been 7 games now since Garland's been out. In that span, Chetty's averaging nearly 6 assists per game. His assist points created per game have jumped up from 9.2 to 14 per game. So I think he's a really solid mid-tier play. Usage rate's also like 2.5 points higher with Love, Sexton, and Garland off the floor. And then Drummond, you know, he's back. 9,300 seems like a lot, but the thing about Drummond in this offense right now, he's got like a 35% usage rate. Like, he is so involved right now, and you know he's going to be one of the most productive rebounders in basketball. I'm still perfectly fine going into Drummond. He had like nearly 60 fantasy points the first time these teams played. And the Knicks aren't the greatest matchup, but for him, they're not bad. I mean, they are allowing the most points per possession to the post and the third highest field goal percentage. And Drummond's actually posting up a lot because they don't have Kevin Love and because they don't have the guards. Like, they're just playing their offense through Drummond in the post a lot. And he's averaging 10 post-ups per game over the last 5 games. Only Joel Embiid. Averaging more during that span. So I like Drummond quite a bit. Knicks are also allowing the most blocks per game to centers, which is nice too.
I would just say if Jared Allen surprisingly plays, that would really limit my Drummond interest.
If Jared Allen plays, I probably – I don't want to say I wouldn't play him at all, but it'd be tough to get to him. Center's not as loaded as usually is on a slate tonight. It's still got plenty of options, don't get me wrong, but – I mean, with the COVID stuff, I mean, we'd be pretty surprised if Jared Allen's there in time, right?
I would agree. The other thing, so Drummond's an interesting question, right? I don't disagree with really anything you said. I would prioritize personally Vooch over Drummond.
That's fair.
And it's really close. I it's crazy to say, but like Drummond actually probably has a higher usage than Vucevic.
He does. But they're both, it's like 35%. It's crazy.
But Vucevic is a little more skilled with that usage, so I'm more confident he can kind of get something done. They're both shorthanded. I think both are totally fine targets. 9.3K for Drummond really is a fair price. So, you know, the minutes are going to be there. He typically crushes the Knicks. I know he, like, absolutely destroyed them in the preseason. So there's certainly a really intriguing ceiling. But, yeah, between Vucevic and Drummond are both, like, really strong pay-up options at center. And it's kind of interesting that they're both kind of the early side of things. Where, you know, I like to say this a lot, where, you know, it's nice to have kind of some cap flexibility for the later games, especially in like a COVID-ridden NBA season where you don't really know what's going to happen. So part of me like doesn't love having, I guess, that much cap tied up in the first set of games, but they're both incredibly strong targets. And if you want to be super contrarian, this really limits your ability to late swap, but you could target both. Like, both of them have 55 plus DK point ceilings. And that's being fairly conservative. And at around 9K, you take that any day.
Yeah. And then Larry Nance, I just haven't been playing because it's this simple. He's not playing any minutes at center because Drummond's playing 36, 37 minutes a night. And then JaVale McGee's the direct backup playing his 18 minutes or whatever. And Nance's rebounding is just not there. He's not a high usage player in the first place. But you look at Larry Nance in terms of his rebounding rate over the last... I mean, he's not playing alongside, or he's playing so many minutes alongside Drummond, it hurts his rebounding rate. He has a 12% rebounding rate over the last week. His price is getting cheaper that he's not the worst option now, but I don't think I'm going to go there. What about the New York side? I mean, Julius Randle bounced back after a tough game against Charlotte. I still think he's priced a little bit too cheap at 9,100, given the fact that he's top 10 in touches and rebounding opportunities per game. He's playing 38 to 42 minutes. That's not even like a typo, like literally 42 minutes at times mm-hmm. in competitive tight games. This game I expect to be pretty tight. Just hard not to like Julius Randle right now with Tom Thibodeau giving him 38 minutes every single game.
Yeah, the only downfall for Randle is this is just a negative game environment. I agree with you. I think he's underpriced, and that's crazy to say at 9.1K for Julius Randle, but the minutes are just too good. And with Alec Burks doubtful, we've seen like Randle's ball handling really, really increase when Burks kind of got hurt, and we've seen that assist rate go up. I think he's been over 5 assists in for 2 weeks.
He just gets – he's done this his whole career, which is why I've always been intrigued by him. Grabs the defensive rebound and it's like, and the guards are like, "Here, give me the ball," and he's like, "No, I'm good," and he brings it up. He's done this every stop.
He's a point forward. Yeah. He actually qualifies as a point forward right now in advanced DVP.
Mm-hmm. As he should.
Which he should. Yeah.
So I like him a lot still. I actually don't hate Austin Rivers if Reggie Bullock's out. They've been starting Rivers. He's played 32 or more minutes in 5 or 6 of his last 7 games. 5,100, taking a decent amount of shots, and Cleveland's giving up the second highest field goal percentage on threes from like above the arc, so like non-corner threes, and Rivers takes a ton of his shots from that part of the floor. In fact, 49% of his shots come from that part of the floor. I actually don't hate Rivers at 5,100. And like Barrett at 7K, like there's not a huge ceiling, but again, like in cash games, like he's going to play 38 minutes if he, hits a lot of his shots and walks into 8 or 9 rebounds, which he's done couple times in the past couple games, he'd be fine. But I don't want to pay 6'8 for Alfred Payton with their guards relatively healthy. With if Obi Toppin's playing more minutes this game, that hurts Kevin Knox. Anybody else on New York interest you? I mean, Mitchell Robinson's been balling.
I'm less interested in Austin Rivers and RJ Barrett as you, just because I don't really want too much exposure in this game. Again, I just think this is a really negative game environment. So if
I don't like
RJ
Barrett, by the way. He's like that player where you make your lineup, you like everybody, and you have this much left, and there's only so many certain guys in that price range, and you see, he's going to play 39 minutes.
Yeah. And I hear you on that. In tournaments, if you're a tournament player and looking to take a bit of a risk, the person I like is Emmanuel Quickley at 3.3K. I think his minutes are going to be in the 20-plus range and continue to go up and up just because Elfrid Payne's not very good at basketball. I hate to say it. I used to love Elfrid Payton in DFS. He was someone who had triple-double potential at 6.8K just in this game environment, not too interested in it. But I also think Emmanuel Quickley is coming for his minutes sooner rather than later. So one of these days, Quickley is going to see 28, 30 minutes at 3.5K, 3.3K, and potentially break the slate. He's a good producer. So just keep your eye out on him. This is probably not the right game environment to gamble on him, but I do think it's coming sooner rather than later.
It's a good call. He had, 19 points their last game?
He had 19, played 22 minutes in a close game.
And he's closed some fourth quarters for them this year, so it wouldn't shock me to see it happen again. All right, Dallas at Milwaukee. We have the two highest-priced players on the slate going at it, Luka and Giannis. Injury news, Dallas still going to be without Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Jalen Brunson, and Maxi Kleber's questionable. Porzingis made his debut last game, played 21 minutes. We expect him to be limited. Took 16 shots in 21 minutes. Had 27 fantasy points. Unless we get word that they're going to move his minutes to 27 or 28 and we get concrete proof, you still probably can't go to him at 8K here, right?
Yeah, so that's the key. If he's in, if they say he's going to play between 25 and 30 minutes, I'm interested.
Sure.
Just because I know his usage is going to be really strong in those limited minutes. It's something I said on the stream when his like first game came, when he, for his first, when he played, he made a season debut, I should say. You know, when players play limited minutes, especially star players, they get their shots up in those limited minutes, and that's good for fantasy production. So I would expect that trend to continue with KP. We just, he needs to be in that 25 plus range. He can't be in that 20 to 25 range at 8K. So that's really what it is. That's what it kind of comes down to, is just if they define his minutes, and if they don't, kind of off of him. If you want to take a shot in, if you're playing 150 lineups, I don't mind being slightly over the field just in case. But you know, that's kind of where it is, because once KP is seeing 30 plus minutes, he's a bargain at 8K. That's kind of what it comes down to. You know, we got to talk about Luka. Dallas is still shorthanded. The production is going to be there. This is a positive pace environment for him. The Bucks are a great defensive team, and so there is the potential to, I guess, stymie him. We could see them double him. I think KP, even in for limited minutes, helps that quite a bit. But, you know, 11K is still too cheap for Luka on DraftKings. Like, he's going to eventually be 11.5, 12K.
Both these guys are too cheap. Giannis, yeah, and Luka, both, they're both way too cheap.
And so that's actually the kind of a good segue to Giannis. You know, I expect this game to stay close, and I actually prefer Giannis over Luka.
I agree, and I wrote that in my article for tomorrow, so we're on the same page. Just
anytime Giannis is in a game where I don't think they're going to get blown out, he's kind of a 60-burger waiting to happen. And Dallas doesn't really have anyone that could compete with him physically to guard him. Like, KP has,
especially now, right? Like, size, but their best bets on ball were like Dorian Finney-Smith and Richardson, like, and they're not even close to being able to stop him. But they were like their best bets just in terms of.
And
on
so
ball.
That's why I like James Johnson a decent amount, and it's kind of dependent on if Maxi Kleber plays. I'm not sure if he's been ruled out yet.
He's questionable.
He's questionable. Yeah.
Oh wait. Oh, no, so, never mind. That was Wednesday's game. Okay, so he's still questionable.
If Kleber is out, I mean, James Johnson's going to have to play because he's going to be their main Giannis defender. That's, I mean, he's really the only one athletically that can keep up with him. They brought him in to guard players like Giannis and to be kind of a Luka bodyguard too. But, you know, 4.6K for James Johnson, potentially 28, 32 minutes of James Johnson, that's something we could be interested in.
Sneaky assist guy he's always been. Now he's not going to have that role very much with Luka, but like, he can get you assists, rebounds, and yeah, like, what if they could start him in this game? Because like, Wes Iwundu should not be starting on any teams. Don't play Wes Iwundu if he starts again. And yeah, like, I went to Willie Cauley-Stein last game with Kleber out. Probably not. It worked out. I mean, it was mainly because of the matchup against Charlotte. I'm not going there here with Porzingis potentially playing more minutes, especially if Kleber's active and the price went up a little bit. Like, I'm kind of off this team other than Luka, James Johnson, and then if we get word on Porzingis maybe playing, like you said, 25, 26, 27 minutes at 8K, he's worth a shot. And I agree, I do prefer Giannis over Luka. Dallas has Porzingis back, but again, he's not going to play 35 minutes in this game, or he's not going to be on the floor a ton with Giannis. Like, he'll be on the floor plenty, but Dallas is allowing the second highest field goal percentage at the rim this year at 70.5%. So, like, they don't have anybody to protect the rim against Giannis. So, again, 10-8 is way too cheap for Giannis. Like, I don't understand why he and Luka are both so cheap. Anybody else in Milwaukee? I've struggled with them because Jrue Holiday has been, he's coming off his best game, but, like, you look at his usage with Milwaukee, and so last year's usage rate was like at 24% with the Pelicans. This year it's at around 18%. And his touches per game last year were 79.2 per game. This year it's 55. Like, he is way less involved. So I haven't really wanted to play Jrue Holiday. Chris Middleton's like a perfectly fine floor play, 8,200, but he'll have an occasional ceiling game for sure with Giannis active. But he's always been more of a player that, when he's priced around this point, you just prefer him to have Giannis out. And then Brook Lopez, I think, is too expensive because he walked into 11 rebounds for once. I went back and looked at some of the numbers since he joined the Bucks. Brook Lopez has played, I think it was 161 regular season games with Milwaukee. He has double-digit rebounds in 8 of them. Like, 7-foot center. And we know why. It's just he sits
he's allergic to rebounding.
And he's got Giannis taking all the boards. But, like, I don't want to pay $5,600 for him. And, like, he can walk into 5-6 blocks. but you're banking on it at that price because he's his ceiling for rebounds most nights is like six.
Yeah, so touching on Drew and Chris Middleton, I actually, if you're fading Giannis, I would want to target one of them in this spot. I think this game is going to be incredibly high scoring. We typically see that when two really good teams with superstars kind of play against each other, especially early in the year where defense is less relevant. So I want some sort of Bucks exposure. If it's not Giannis, I would look to Drew Holiday or Chris Middleton. One thing about Drew that intrigues me, and this is kind of a qualitative factor, but they brought him in for kind of big moments, and this is really kind of their first big moment game just because it's against Luka, right? And he's going to be on Luka the majority of the game. At 7.2K on DraftKings, I think there is a ceiling there. The minutes have been good. I understand the usage is way down, but I think we see a little more active Drew Holiday.
That's a fair point.
So I'm interested in Drew. I wouldn't recommend playing him and Giannis in the same lineup. I'm not against playing Chris Middleton and Drew in the same lineup if you're trying to correlate a bad Giannis game. But, you know, I think Drew is interesting. But again, Giannis is the priority for me here. He was actually the first person in my lineup just because I saw, you know, I thought he was actually going to be priced up a little more when I first opened the slate. Saw him at 10.8. Just, it's too cheap, especially in a competitive game.
Yeah, way too cheap for Giannis. I agree. I like him the most from this game. And if I'm paying up for one of these studs, it's definitely going to be Giannis. All right, let's move on. Memphis at Minnesota. These teams played on Wednesday night. I've been chasing the Joval ceiling game for like five, six games in a row now, and it finally happened against Minnesota, which isn't too surprising because Minnesota's been awful this year defensively. But Joval went for 24 and 16 with two blocks, 30 minutes. He's still just 7,100, but John Morant's questionable. He got upgraded to questionable. He hasn't played since the end of December after that ankle injury. I still think he's more towards doubtful, but the fact that he's upgraded to questionable means he's probably going to be back soon, maybe after the weekend. Mm-hmm. If John Morant plays, I don't know if I'm playing anybody on Memphis. I might still take a shot on Valanciunas because he's still cheap enough, and we know he doesn't have to play 35 minutes to go off because he's so efficient. But like, I don't know if I want to play John his first game back from a relatively long absence with an ankle injury. And then if he's back, like Kyle Anderson's point forward duties go down. De'Anthony Melton's not a viable option. Dylan Brooks takes a hit. Like Brandon Clark takes a hit. What do you think of Memphis if John Morant somehow plays? And who do you like if he doesn't play?
I would like John Morant if he plays.
Yeah, not worried.
It depends on like if they say he's on some sort of minutes limit. Mm-hmm. I would obviously not be on him, but Minnesota is a team we can attack in DFS. Their defense is horrific. They're a pace-up spot. Ja Morant increases the Grizzlies' pace. So, you know, overall, this is a positive game environment for DFS. At 7.5K, that's a bit of a bargain in this sort of game, and no one's going to play him because they'll be worried about the injury. So if Morant's playing and they say, let's say they say his minutes are going to be monitored, he's not, they don't like define a minutes limit. They just say Morant's minutes will be monitored, which doesn't really mean anything. I will be pretty interested in Ja Morant. The spot is really, really good and the price is good. So that would be my only interest if Morant is playing, is Ja Morant. If Morant is out, I think you can go back to Jonas for sure. You know, we saw that ceiling game. I don't think it's a surprise that it came against the T-Wolves, so it's a great spot for him. I would have some interest in De'Anthony Melton just because 4.3K is still affordable. I expect him to play 22 to 25 minutes. He'll be a little over a fantasy point per minute. So I do think there's a ceiling there, and there's an off chance that he sees a minutes bump. The other person who no one really talks about who's been like solid, he wasn't great against Minnesota, but I mean Tyus Jones is in play at 6.5K in tournaments because people are gonna be scared off by that price, and he's a decent producer in a spot that benefits him. So I would be interested in Tyus Jones. People are going to talk about Dylan Brooks. His price is slightly down at 6.3K. I don't think it's down enough, but there's always a ceiling with Dylan Brooks in a good game environment. His efficiency has been kind of down the past like 5 days. He had one, I think, good shooting day against Brooklyn. But besides that, he just hasn't been super efficient. So he has he's due factor in a game where he should see more efficient looks. So I'm not against Dylan Brooks if John Morant doesn't play. But it would mostly be focused on Jonas, maybe some De'Anthony Melton, maybe some Dylan Brooks and maybe some Tyus Jones. They're kind of complicated.
They're running like a 10-man rotation right now, which is why Dylan Brooks, I'm kind of off him, because Dylan Brooks has been at 29 or fewer minutes in 7 of his last 8 games. Like, sure, they've gotten blown out there a handful of times too, but like even in close games, he's playing like 28 minutes a lot of these games. Like, they're running a lot of guys in rotations, and that's without Ja Morant. So,
the guy I didn't mention that I actually probably should have started with, because I'm actually most interested in him, is Brandon Clark. Mm-hmm. And I view Clark as more of a tournament play than cash play, just because he's kind of boom or bust, but he has a considerable ceiling, especially if he's playing 30-plus minutes, which he has been playing 30-plus minutes since Ja Morant went down. So 6.1K doesn't scare me off on someone who has legitimately 40-plus DK point upside in a positive game. Yeah, he went 40. He had 40 DK points in his last game against the T-Wolves. So, you know, the ceiling is certainly there.
Shams Charania reports Yusuf Nurkic has suffered a broken right wrist.
Well, he's not coming back in this game.
He has some very bad injury luck.
Yep.
And it's Cantor time in Portland again. Minnesota, Karl-Anthony Towns, he returned the one game, sat the second out of back-to-back, and then played Wednesday night against Memphis. He had a great game, too, 25-14 with 3 assists and a pair of blocks. He's still under 10K, and we have Ricky Rubio ruled out. What does Rubio's absence potentially do? He hasn't been starting. His minutes have been, you know, around 24, 25 per game. Does Anthony Edwards get a bump? Does D'Angelo Russell do his minutes seem more solidified? Does Rubio's absence do anything for Minnesota? Where it's, for me, it's been I'm either playing Towns when he's healthy or some D'Angelo Russell. Like, Malik Beasley's price has been a little too high for me, given the fact that he doesn't offer usually a ton of peripherals. He did in the last game, though. He was fantastic, and he plays so many minutes. What do you think of Minnesota?
So I think Rubio gives D'Angelo Russell just minutes. They solidify his minutes. He might pick up a minute or two. I think Jordan McLaughlin will pick up kind of most of Rubio's minutes as that backup point guard or that backup ball handler. I also think Anthony Edwards sees a minutes bump. I have some interest in Anthony Edwards at 4.5K. If he's in the 25-minute range, there's a ceiling there considering the amount he shoots. And he's a high-usage guy, a high-motor guy in his minutes. So I think I like the 4.5K price tag, and I would view him as the main beneficiary of Ricky Rubio's absence. Last game, I was all over Karl-Anthony Towns because he was coming in at sub 10% owned. You know, the Grizzlies per advanced EVP are 29th versus skilled centers, 28th versus rim protectors, 23rd versus rebounders, 27th versus scorers. So it's hard not to like this matchup for Karl-Anthony Towns. He was pretty good in that last game. I wanted to see more. At 9.3K, though, he gave you 52.5 DK points, so you're happy with that. His price is up at 9.9K. We really want 60 DK points from him, so we want like that mega, mega ceiling game from Karl-Anthony Towns, and it's a ceiling matchup. So I'm going to be interested again. I think his ownership is going to be down. Between the 9K centers, between him, Vucevic, and Drummond, the three we've talked about, I would rank him at the top in tournaments just because I do think he has the highest, I guess the most likelihood to a ceiling game. But Vucevic would be like the safest of those 9K, of those 9K centers. But, you know, it's really, for me, those are the three guys. It's Karl-Anthony Towns I'll have interest in, D'Angelo Russell I'll have interest in, and Anthony Edwards. I'm less so on Malik Beasley just because his price is up and I think people are going to chase that ceiling game he had last game. And don't get me wrong, the minutes for Beasley are great. The shot attempts are great. This is the right matchup for him. I prefer him in that like 6.5K range rather than that 7.1K range just because of that floor-ceiling combo, and I still don't really trust his floor.
Yeah, I agree. Edwards was the non-Russell Towns player that stood out to me. He's been under 20 minutes in back-to-back games, but if he can get it to 23 to 25, he like you said, he will shoot it, so... All right, Chicago and OKC up next. The Bulls look like they're going to get Lauri Markkanen, Otto Porter Jr. back into the lineup while Garrett Temple's questionable. This game, Chicago's obviously a great matchup, right? They're playing fast this year. Their defense hasn't been good. The problem is the Thunder are pretty gross. Darius Bazley is also questionable too, and he's obviously a huge part of their rotation, playing a lot of power forward, getting a lot of rebounds, playing a ton of minutes. I mean, Shea's obviously where you start. He's been good this year, but there's been a lot of those like 35, 25-point games mixed in with some 50-point games. But 7-7 seems fair, especially in this matchup. You know, high-paced spot, bad defense. Anybody else in the Thunder stand out? I guess we'll have to wait and see with Bazley, because if he's out, you know, Isaiah Roby, Muscala, these guys could get more run. Pokuševski could get more run at 3,300. Thoughts on the Thunder?
So if Bazley's out, I would have a lot of interest in Hamadou Diallo. I think he would see a minutes increase and we'll see him crash the boards
lately for like out of nowhere.
My main priority, regardless of Bazley's news, is Shea. I think this is a great spot for him. There's a lot of Shea bias going around. He had back-to-back bad games, but this is an absolute ceiling matchup for him, and his price is down. So I love me some Shea today. He's actually one of my favorite dollar-for-dollar plays at 7.7K, which is kind of expensive to say for a dollar-for-dollar play. So I'm very, very interested in him. I know, I hope Josh Kalachi isn't listening to this, but I think you can target yourself some Al Horford.
I don't. Okay, I didn't want to say it, but I actually don't hate Al Horford here at 5,600.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good price for him in a decent spot. And if Bazley's out, that's going to lead to rebounding upside for Al Horford. Bazley's known to kind of grab his boards. So, you know, this is a really interesting spot for the Thunder, and I want some Thunder exposure in this on this slate if I'm playing one lineup, because I want to attack the Bulls. You said it. This is about as good of a matchup as I can get. So I love Shea. Really interested in Hamadou Diallo if Bazley's out. If Bazley's in, I'm interested in Darius Bazley. Heavily interested in him at 5.7K. There's a legit ceiling there. And, you know, Josh's favorite guy, Al Horford, certainly in the conversation. You mentioned Pokuševski. I get it. I like the call, actually. I wish he wasn't just power forward eligible on DraftKings. I think that's really frustrating, where he doesn't play power forward. He actually plays shooting guard small forward for the Thunder, even though he's 7'2". So you've got some height bias there. But if Bazley's out, 3.3K Pokuševski in this game environment is certainly appealing.
The Bulls, like, I don't like their prices at all. So, like, LaVine, 9,500, like, he's been awesome. Like, I don't think you're crazy for playing LaVine at that price. But, like, other than that, like, 7,400 for Kobe White isn't that enticing to me. Like, Wendell Carter Jr. at 6,200, the matchup's good. I mean, the Thunder have been awful at defending the pick and roll this year. Like, absolutely terrible. Right now, this season they're giving up, let's see, the fourth most points per game to the roll man out of the pick and roll. Wendell Carter Jr. has like a 33% frequency rate off pick and roll, like one of the five highest rates in the league. The problem is his rebounding rate goes down with Markin in the lineup. His minutes aren't like anything too special. He's 6,200, and like I started writing about this game where I was pretty much said, I would just rather play the other center from this game and play Al Horford for $600 less, because Horford's not really playing 30 minutes very often, but neither is Wendell Carter Jr. And the pace up spot favors Horford. So the Bulls are kind of tough, especially with Otto Porter Jr. back. Like, that takes you off Patrick Williams and Thaddeus Young, and Garrett Temple's questionable. Like, who do you like on the Bulls except for Zach LaVine, unless you don't even like Zach LaVine?
I think Kobe White is targetable at 7.4K. He's priced up, but there's still a ceiling there, and the minutes are going to be good. They're not going to be as good as they have been because they're just getting healthier. I tend to agree with you. I don't have much interest in the Bulls. I think we can get better value elsewhere. We don't have to force the Bulls side of things. You know, they're priced based off the pace they play, so we're not getting any sort of discount in their price because we like the Bulls game environment. They play in this game environment every single day. So it's the Thunder that really see the boost. It's not the Bulls. and, you know, people sometimes get confused with that, so I just want to make that clear. So, you know, again, I'm with you. There's no one I'm forcing in my lineup on the Bulls. I think you can talk yourself into Zach LaVine just because he always has that ceiling. But 9.5K, you know, that floor certainly comes into play at that price tag. Like, you need to get like 52, 54, at least 52 from him. And, you know, with the Bulls getting healthier, with Markkanen back, with Porter expected to play, it's just, you know, even three less or four less shot attempts there just hurts him at that price tag. So not a ton of interest in Zach LaVine.
Yeah, I really don't like the Bulls at all in this spot. If I had to play one, it would be Zach LaVine in tournaments, but I'm just not crazy about any of their prices, really, and now they're getting healthier. So let's move to Atlanta and Utah. This game's in Utah. The Jazz are six-point favorites, 223 implied total. Clint Capella off the injury report. He's good to go, even though he didn't miss last game. Gallinari not going to be back. He's still out. Same with Bogdanovich. Joe Ingles also ruled out for the Jazz. Where do you want to start here? I mean, pretty interesting game. Like, nobody stands out as, like, a complete misprice or anything like that to me. Donovan Mitchell has been a guy that I just don't get right. So he scares me on any given slate. But, I mean, this matchup isn't bad for really anybody on Utah, obviously.
So I'm going to start on the Atlanta side, actually. Go for it. He's not been great, and we've seen his ceiling kind of be limited with more, I guess, mouths to feed with the Hawks. But they're banged up. There's no Bogdan. There's no Danilo Gallinari. I mean, there's Clint Capella, but, you know, I'm not worried about Capella stealing usage from Trae Young. And his price is down to 8.7K. People are going to be scared off by that Utah matchup. And, you know, their defense has been better this year. But, you know, something I've always talked about is we don't have to be too scared about the Jazz defense. You know, they rank 22nd versus scorers per advanced EVP. In the past, you know, you could attack the Jazz with point guards and centers where they kind of struggle in defending the pick and roll because Rudy Gobert overplays it. And Trae Young is someone who can exploit that.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really interested in Trae Young at his decreased price tag in a matchup that I think people are going to be scared of, and they should not be.
He's like my favorite tournament play this late. I love playing these high usage, awesome point guards against the Jazz because people think it's like this death matchup, and it's not.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if he was 8.7K kind of against any other team, he would probably be viewed as the chalk of the slate. And targeting like one of Giannis and Luka with Trae Young means you can't spend up on one of those kind of juicy centers, which I think is okay. I would actually prioritize Trae Young in tournaments over one of those 9K centers just because he's priced down. He's under 9K on DraftKings, and his ceiling is right there with them, if not higher. And if this game stays competitive, it's going to be because Trae Young is balling out. So Trae Young is one of my favorite tournament plays. We're in agreement there. I think you can stack Young and one of Clint Capella or John Collins where you're trying to attack that Utah pick and roll. Capella's minutes have been down his last three games, but I'm not overly concerned about it. I think he'll be somewhere around 30. At 6.7K, you know, he's not a bargain. I think he's priced fairly. But there's a ceiling there, and he correlates well with Trae Young in the pick and roll if they're overplaying it. John Collins, similarly, I don't love the 7K price tag based off his production. But he's someone that, you know, you can exploit against the Jazz. So I have interest in Atlanta, believe it or not, in this sort of matchup. The other person, you know, we can mention like the three wings, DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about them.
Yeah, DeAndre Hunter, Kevin Huerter, and Cam Reddish. I prefer – like Hunter is the most expensive of them, but his production has been far and away the safest. I think DeAndre Hunter is a totally fine target. It's not the best matchup, but I trust his production. 4.8K for Cam Reddish in a game that, you know, he should see decent minutes. Again, they're short of bodies is interesting. And Huerter, I'm not against it. I just I don't know. I prefer either Hunter or Cam Reddish.
I agree. And John Collins is just, his ceiling's been lower this year with Capella because he's playing more four. He's had some solid rebounding games alongside Capella, but the price is fair for him, but I don't have any confidence in it right now. I do love Trae Young, though. I'm glad you brought that up. What about Utah? You know, Atlanta's a team that will play fast. Their defense isn't anything to write home about. Rudy Gobert is down to 7,800. He hasn't scored.
That's the guy. I mean, that's the 7,800 is too cheap for this sort of matchup.
Will he score 10 real points? Because he hasn't done it three straight games.
I think he will. He's just too cheap in this sort of matchup. It's hard not to like him. I think you could also toss in Boyan. He's a bit scoring dependent, which is never great, and his shooting has been fairly inconsistent. But 5.3K, small forward and power forward eligible. You know, we like that here. And if you're playing Trae Young, I would want to run it back with at least one Jazz player just because if Trae Young's going to hit his ceiling in this matchup, Utah's going to have to do something. And Atlanta is such a good matchup in DFS. So someone's going to do something, right? So I prefer targeting Gobert or Boyan as kind of cheaper options away from Donovan Mitchell. The guy who I think is going to not get overlooked, but he has been overlooked, is Jordan Clarkson, because, you know, Joe Ingles is out. That's good for Jordan Clarkson. That means increased usage with that second unit. 6,100 isn't too expensive for him in this sort of game environment. So I'm more so looking to target the Utah guys not named Donovan Mitchell, where I think people will try and force Donovan Mitchell
even,
in. Just
even Conley. Like, Conley's been just as good as Mitchell this year. And he's, like, what, $1,800 cheaper? Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. If they both hit their ceiling, Donovan Mitchell could be a player where if you don't have him, you're not winning anything. And Conley could be like, okay, I didn't have my Conley. Let's move on. But, like, Conley's been running their pick and roll this year. Like, it hasn't been Donovan Mitchell.
And aside from that one, I think he had that 150 burger recently, Mitchell has just been, like, he's been fine. He hasn't been great, but he hasn't really had any ceiling games.
He's averaging 37.5, almost 37.5 DK points per game. Conley's averaging 34. And there's a huge discount with Conley.
So, we're in agreement here. It's mostly kind of those cheaper Jazz guys. I'm okay playing two Jazz and Trae Young, even on a bigger slate. I think it's okay to game stack here if you're playing Trae Young. Just because, again, if Trae Young's going to hit that mega ceiling, we got to expect this game to kind of blow up. And Utah's going to get theirs just because this matchup is so good.
Donovan Mitchell will be going off now because I'm not really on.
He's going for 80.
So yeah, like 80 row points. He's going to go crazy. All right, two games left. The Pelicans at the Lakers. Backcourt still an issue for the Pelicans, or maybe it's not because they have the best player in the league, Nikhil Alexander Walker. Eric Bledsoe questionable with the eye. Lonzo Ball already ruled out. I mean, Alexander Walker was incredible. 37 points against the Clippers, 8 rebounds. Almost willed the Pelicans to a win, 52.5 fantasy points. I mean, if Bledsoe's out as well, I mean, do we just go right back to him at 4,400? I know Zion
I don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
I don't think twice about it. If Bledsoe's out, I'm playing Nikhil. Don't really care what his ownership is. He's not over 5K. He's sub 5K. He'll be one of the best values. And I'm not overly concerned that Zion is playing because he's going to get his shots, you know? He likes to shoot. So if the minutes are there, the shots are going to be there. The usage is going to be there. And he's blowout proof. So if the Lakers run away with this, he's going to get blowout minutes or he'll see even more usage. So fully on board there.
34.2% usage rate last game for Alexander Walker.
And that's about right. Like in the summer league and preseason, when he's had the opportunity to do that, his usage was in the 30s. So, I mean, this is the type of player he is. That's just kind of what it comes down to.
Who else in the Pelicans? Brandon Ingram in a revenge game. Pretty expensive. You know he's playing 40 minutes in close games. Now, the Lakers are playing fantastic this year, obviously. Could they pull away in this game? Sure, and that could hurt Ingram. Same goes for Zion, who... It was weird. Like, he was 7,300 for Thursday's game, or for Wednesday's game before it got postponed. And I was like, I love Zion here. Now he's 7,900 again, which... He's not, like, a bad play at that price. It's just he could have been a lot cheaper, potentially. And then you have, you know, Josh Hart, who played 38 minutes, didn't do much. The usage really wasn't there. He's a good rebounder, though. Like, that price isn't terrible. It's just there's a lot of players in that price range we talked about. What do you think of the rest of the Pelicans?
So if Bledsoe plays, I have interest in Eric Bledsoe. Quite a bit of interest, actually, at sub-6K. So, I mean, I just kind of want to get that out of the way. It sucks because it's Eric Bledsoe. It's never fun to play Eric Bledsoe. But
to play Eric Bledsoe?
When he was on
Phoenix.
On Phoenix, too. Yeah, that's true.
He was awesome on Phoenix for fantasy. I had him I had some of my best lineups with Eric Bledsoe.
You know who did not like Eric Bledsoe on Phoenix?
Eric Bledsoe.
Yes.
Such a good tweet.
That was a layup.
Yeah. If you follow NBA Twitter, NBA, like that was a layup. Otherwise, you're like, oh, his coaches must hate him or something, which maybe they did. I don't know.
But you know, I'm still interested in Zion, honestly, at sub 8K. This game has to stay close, so there is some blowout potential. You know, excuse my language, I'm so fucking tired of the Lakers. Like they're just driving me crazy. Just like They're always questionable.
But they're not. Like, LeBron's playing. They're not. Davis, yeah, Davis playing is the one where you have to, like, look, you have to, like, second guess because it's Anthony Davis.
It's fucking annoying. So I think I actually don't mind the Ingram kind of revenge narrative. I think there's something to it. I don't think he loved being traded. Not that he loved being traded. I think he like took offense to it, and we saw him, I think, have a ceiling game against the Lakers, one of those games last year. We also saw Anthony Davis have a mega ceiling game against the Pelicans. So I mean, I think there's something there, but it's tough to prioritize him in this sort of matchup on a large slate at 8.6K, especially if Eric Bledsoe plays.
Speaking of the Lakers, I mean, LeBron and Anthony Davis are both under 10K. LeBron 9700, I think Davis is 9800. So like really nice price tags for them. They've been blowing teams out the last three games, but LeBron's still been awesome. It's just he hasn't played 33, 34, 35 minutes. I think the Pelicans can keep this close, especially if Bledsoe plays. Like, they're so interesting on this slate where you have your like top-tier spend-up options in Giannis and Luka, but then there's plenty of players in that, like, 75 to 8K range that are all really interesting. So, like, LeBron, you've been getting LeBron and Anthony Davis at, like, they have not been very popular this year, I feel like, in regards to what they normally would be.
Well, they're just, like, kind of coasting games and blowing out everyone. One big factor in that is, like, you know, last year's Lakers, they were so production dominant on LeBron and Anthony Davis. They really, they really had no one. Like, that was it. It was them two, and they would just account for like 60 or 70% of every statistic. And it was like if both of them at like 10.5K.
The only exception would be the rare games where like Danny Green and KCP would combine for like 8 threes or 9 threes, and
then
that means LeBron had 15 assists in that game.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The problem is with Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol, you know, they're less production dependent. They're kind of just like coasting, right? And they're kind of coasting to get ready for the playoffs, and it's totally fine because they're winning and they're just blowing everyone out. So, you know, this is another potential blowout. Maybe not. I mean, I'm crediting Lonzo too much. I think the Lakers are really good. So, you know, in tournaments, I certainly have interest in Anthony Davis or LeBron James. I would lean Anthony Davis slightly in this matchup, just because of the narrative. And I'm not like a qualitative guy, like a qualitative factor guy or a narrative guy. I just, you know, that's literally the difference between them. And, you know, they're priced the same. Their production has been fairly similar. Like, when was the last time we saw LeBron James have, what, five straight games under 50 fantasy points?
Right.
The minutes aren't going to be great for any of them. So, you know, I'm okay just fading the Lakers in general, especially in cash. Like, the Pelicans, and this is an important note, if people haven't been following the Pelicans this year, this is not the Pelicans of last year. This isn't just a matchup that we just salivate for and just, like, we need to attack the Pelicans. It's the complete opposite. Stan Van Gundy came in here. He said he was going to slow the pace down. I didn't think he was going to slow it down this much. I think they are the slowest-paced team in the
NBA.
They're
really annoying, actually, to watch. Like, unless you love Brandon Ingram, because it's just Brandon Ingram ISOs. They're not running Zion in the pick and roll. They're just saying, hey, Zion, if we get like a steal or a defensive rebound where the defense isn't ready, just go run and we'll throw it to you. Otherwise, we're slowing it down in the half court. We're letting Brandon Ingram run the pick and roll occasionally in ISO, or Zion's just cutting. Like, Zion's averaging like 5 points per game off cuts, which makes sense. But like, the fact that they're not using him in the pick and roll as much, like, it's weird to watch them right now on offense.
Yeah, they're just not as fun. That's kind of what it comes down to.
You would think they would be like, okay, cool. Like, we're throwing lobs to Zion from half court. Like, I almost wish LaMelo Ball was on this team instead of Lonzo.
Yeah. You said it all. That's it.
All right, let's close it out. Kings at home against the Clippers. Lou Williams is dealing with a hip injury. He only played 9 minutes in the last game before leaving. He's questionable. Patrick Beverley's also questionable. He's got a personal issue, so he might be out. Otherwise, this game is good to go. I guess let's start with the Clippers. I mean, Sacramento's obviously a good matchup. They're playing fast. Their defense has been really bad. We've seen a lot of games, including Wednesday nights against Portland, just shoot out against them. Paul George and Kawhi are pretty much like the LeBron and Anthony Davis. They're always in that like 9-3 to 9-8 price range, except their minutes are a little bit more secure because they're not exactly blowing teams out. Paul George has been playing fantastic this year. I don't think enough people are talking about it. I mean, Kawhi, same thing for him. Like, they both set up as like perfectly fine plays, I feel like, in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the Kings are a great, great matchup. They're a team, again, if you're not having paying attention to the Kings this year, they're a team we want to attack in DFS. I think they're like bottom three against scorers, bottom three against primary ball handlers, bottom three against dimers. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are dominating production for the Clippers. You know, in terms of like 9K plus players, you know, and I'll just compare them to the other team in LA, I'd much rather target Paul George and Kawhi Leonard over Anthony Davis or LeBron James. Like, I would rank them one of the Clippers guys would rank 1 and 2, and Lakers guys would rank 3 and 4, just because of game environment. I expect this game to stay close enough. I'm not overly concerned about a blowout. You know, people are going to probably target Paul George over Kawhi Leonard. And that makes me super intrigued with Kawhi in tournaments. It's just a great spot. No one's really going to stop him, especially if Lou Williams is scratched. And, you know, we'll see. I think that's actually a sneaky important piece of news. You know, his minutes haven't been great. So it's like, you know, I don't want to over, like, I don't want to blow this out of proportion. But even like 18 minutes less of Lou Williams means the usage for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard when they're playing with the second unit increases, right? If Lou Williams isn't there taking the ball out of their hands, it'll be more Paul George, more Kawhi Leonard, even in those limited minutes, which is great for players. People don't take that to take those like kind of limited minutes and increased usage in like 5 minute spurts into account enough. And I talked about it with Caris LeVert all the time, where, you know, last year we were like getting him, you know, we were talking about, oh, well, only like Kyrie is out, right? So, you know, it's him or Spencer Dinwiddie. And people were targeting Spencer Dinwiddie before Caris kind of became the name that he is now in DFS. But, you know, what I always kept saying is like the 10 to 15 minutes he's not playing on, he's not sharing the court with Spencer Dinwiddie. Caris LeVert is at like a 40%+ usage. And like those 10 to 15 minutes really matter in DFS. And we could see something similar here with Kawhi and Paul George, where, you know, those 10 to 15 minutes where they'll be on the floor without Lou Williams, they'll probably be more like 7 minutes each. But even those 7 minutes, we'll see higher per minute production than we typically would have. And that's important for guys who are plus 9K plus. So, yeah, Kawhi and Paul George are certainly strong plays, and I like Kawhi quite a bit.
Anybody else in the Clippers? I mean, like, I don't know if you'd have to go to Luke Kennard if Lou Williams is out, but he could maybe play like 25 minutes.
Yeah, not really.
But, yeah.
It's just like the ceiling's not really there. And, like, the minutes between Ibaka and Zubac are kind of annoying. Yep. It's really just paying up for one of the expensive guys.
I think Ibaka's way too expensive at 6,200.
Yep.
Like, if I'm going up to that range, I'd rather play like Mitchell Robinson or one of the other centers we talked about. Close it out with the Kings. They're healthy. They got all their guys right now. Rashawn Holmes is pretty expensive at 6,800. Like, the Clippers interior can be had, but I don't know if I want to pay that for him. De'Aaron Fox is 8,100, which is about right for him. I don't know. Nobody on the Kings like stands out as like a must play. Halliburton's obviously been way more involved lately, but 6,700 for him is a little bit I don't love their prices, to be honest. And then, like, Harrison Barnes is even like 6,500, where he's gonna play a ton of minutes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the Kings are weird, right? I mean, I think De'Aaron Fox is still priced fairly low at 8.1K. I think he's really like an 8.7K, 9K plus type player based off his like per minute production, his usage. The problem with Fox is he does have sometimes legit, like, super, super floor games where, you know, his floor is not, like, 35 at 8.1K. His floor is, like, 18. And we've seen that a couple of times. And that's just lineup killing. So against the Clippers in a mediocre matchup, I get being kind of hesitant to target him. But, again, I just think he's too cheap. I think Halliburton at 6.7K is a little too expensive for me. The production's been great, but he's not, like, at 6.7K, I want him playing, like, 34, 35-plus minutes, not 30. Right. And so I don't think there's a big enough ceiling to consider targeting him at 6,700. You know, that's dependent on if Buddy Hield is downgraded from probable to doubtful or out. You know, that changes Halliburton, but, you know, whatever. At 6.9K on DraftKings for Hield, it's kind of similar to Halliburton. The minutes are safer. I just don't trust the production in this sort of matchup. it's frustrating because, like, if you play Kawhi or Paul George, you're like, your instinct is, I have to run it back with one of the Kings, because if they hit their ceiling, you know, the Kings have to stay in this game. I don't think that's as necessary as it is in, like, other games, like kind of how we talked about with Trae Young here. You know, the Clippers can blow out the Kings, and Kawhi still have 55, 60 DK points, or Paul George had the same, just because they are so production dominant for that team. So if they're going, if they're blowing the Kings out, that means one of them is going off. So I'm not too concerned about forcing a King in my lineup. If I'm like, I would prioritize De'Aaron Fox. I think Rashawn Holmes is certainly in play. The minutes are just great. You know, even his price up at 6.8K, it's not really too high if he's playing 35 plus minutes. You know, he's someone who racks up stocks. He's a good rebounder. He's a better scorer than people give him credit for. So I have no issue kind of getting to 6.8K Rashawn Holmes.
All right. I like this slate a lot, especially when you have a lot of interesting players in the 9K range. And not only do you have Giannis and Luka on the slate, but they're playing each other, which makes it a little bit more fun. Steph, talk about the NBA content at FTN, what you got going. I know you've been doing a lot of live shows pretty much every night. We have multiple live shows, which is great. And then I'm handling the content one more time this week. And then Joe has the weekend content, so he'll be back, which, again, happy to have him back. But, yeah, what do we got going on for Friday?
Yeah, I mean, we will have, you know, the NBA First Look written by you. I was going to say yours truly, but that means me. So by the great Adam Pfeiffer. And we'll have Five Stats Know, also written by you, which is a great, great article. It kind of gives you an in-depth look of, like, just five key stats that help you really understand the slate. And it's a new piece we added to our content, our NBA content schedule, that I just love. I'm really happy with that piece. You know, then we'll have our Cash Core. We'll have, you know, Javier and Tenacious D, David Jones, who's won 100K twice now this year.
Stupid.
Yeah, a little jealous there. But, you know, they'll have the GPP article. You know, those are two of the best DFS players in the world. You want to check them out. You want to check it out. You know, they have just great insight and great just kind of DFS theory. And they use their basketball knowledge and their DFS theory to just create really awesome GPP cores. So want to definitely check that out. I'll have my daily Tiers Talk article out for those people who like tiers. It's a lot of fun. I just kind of break down the tier slate. I talk about situations and certain builds to help you kind of leverage the field. And then we go right to the live streams where we've got, you know, FTN Primetime, the 5 to 6 p.m. stream. Actually, I think tomorrow will be 5:30 to 6:30 with the 7:30 start, where, you know, that first stream just breaks down the entire slate. It kind of – It's the playoff of Adam Pfeiffer's article, where, you know, he has the first look, the game by game breakdown, and then the 5 to 6 stream kind of goes over that article.
Yeah, and makes up for everything that the slate ruined with all the news. So it's perfect.
Exactly. and then we go right to Live with Fast Eddie Fear for that late news, for those late questions to help you find leverage on the field. And, you know, our subs have been crushing it. You know, we had a couple 19K winners yesterday. You know, it's just been a great, great start to the season. Over $150,000 have been won by subs in 2021 already. So very, very pleased and happy and proud of our subs for kind of consuming the content and using it to the best of their ability. So kudos to you, Adam, for that, for being a part of that. And, you know, I just highly recommend you guys joining. It's $49.99 per month. Use promo code. Do you have your own promo code, Adam? You want to plug it?
I believe it's just Adam Pfeiffer, yeah.
There we go.
Pfeiffer. It might actually just be Pfeiffer. One of the two.
Try Pfeiffer or Adam Pfeiffer. And if that doesn't work, try FTN Nation for 10% off.
If that doesn't work, try Bills Mafia. It's probably the third option.
It could be Bills Mafia. That's a good point. And yeah, just, you know, we want to give you a shot. You know, our chat's buzzing.
Discord's so fun.
Yeah. It's a great community. You know, we all root together. We all tilt together. We all are pumped when someone's kind of sweating and we all sweat together. So.
Discord was so fun on Wednesday during the Harden trade too. So fun. Yeah.
And then when Bol Bol got the surprise start the other day, that's when it really blew up. but it's a great community. So highly recommend you guys join us, you know, and you know, that's kind of it. You know, we cover it all. We want to be your one-stop shop for NBA DFS.
Absolutely. Always a good time with Steph. You're always welcome on, even when Joe's back. Maybe we'll just kick Joe out. He's got more important things. He's busy with a newborn. But, yeah, like I said, Joe will be back this weekend doing the content, and then Joe will be back with me on the podcast the following Monday. So Best of luck on this slate to close out the week on Friday. Make sure you're checking out all the content at FTN Daily. Hop in the Discord. Have a good one. Have a great weekend. We will see you guys on Monday. Leave a rating and a review. Helps us out a lot. Until then, have a good one. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.